This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Post-traumatic stress disorder, a debilitating anxiety disorder that may develop after exposure to a shocking, frightening, or dangerous event. That's according to the National Institute of Mental Health. We associate it with our veterans, but it's everywhere. A lot of people have this. People have never even seen combat. People just in daily life have become diagnosed with PTSD. But San Antonio has become a leader in looking for treatments for PTSD. And now there's an effort to create here the National Center for Warrior Resiliency, which would become a top flight center to treat veterans and also civilians from across the nation suffering from this affliction. Do you think San Antonio should become the home to this national PTSD resource? What's your PTSD story? Did you seek treatment? How did that work out for you? We want to hear your story. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. We're joined with State Representative Roland Gutierrez. He's from District 119 here in San Antonio, a Democrat chair of the Texas House Defense and Veterans Affairs Committee. And he has filed a bill which is calling for the establishment of the National Center for Warrior Resiliency, HB 2571. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment. Representative Gutierrez, great to have you here, sir.
Thank you so much, David. I appreciate it.
Also with me in the studio, we have Dr. Alan Peterson. And he is the director of Strong Star, which is looking at ways to try and figure out treatments for PTSD here in San Antonio. He is with the School of Medicine and the University of Texas Health Science Center. And also with us here is Colonel Chetan Kurod. He's an active duty U.S. Air Force EMS physician, special operations flight surgeon, and the program director for the Department of Defense Military EMS and also working on the PTSD issues as well and resiliency. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thanks.
So I'll dig in a little bit deeper about some issues, some questions people have about PTSD, but I really want to find out what Representative Gutierrez has got cooking here. How are things going with this this notion to create the National Center for Warrior Resiliency in San Antonio?
Well, first off, thank you for the interest. This is obviously a very important issue. I was honored this year with a chairmanship. There's only a chairman in the San Antonio area, myself and Lyle Larson, and the speaker found his, I was honored with his intent on making me the chair of Defense and Veterans Affairs. And so it was important for me to try to do something transformational. Not having a military background, certainly being part of Military City USA, being on the city council, we know the importance of the military. I wanted to be able to not just be a committee chair that passed my colleagues' bills on to the next calendars committee and then ultimately onto the floor. So I sat down with the folks at UHS and I said I needed to speak to someone on PTSD. And I then realized what was happening and what was going on. They brought me Dr. Alan Peterson, and Dr. Peterson and I have been collaborating very quickly over the last 4 to 5 weeks, and we filed a bill very quickly because I felt that this is something that is so important. This is certainly a dream that him and his colleagues have had, and I think we do a lot of things well in San Antonio when it comes to the military. I think the past BRAC closures have indicated that, and or the BRAC increases have indicated that for San Antonio. We have the best burn center in the world, and we are already spending the most money, having the most qualified research. We have the most money being spent on research and treatment than any other place in the nation. And so I feel that it was important to do this and follow up on their dream, creating this National Center for Warrior Resiliency. As to your question, my colleagues are signing on. I think that they do like it. I've got about 50 co-authors right now, 4 joint authors, mostly 3 Republicans, 2 Democrats. And so we're moving in the right direction. The bill will be referred today, God willing, to our committee, Defense Veterans Affairs, and then we're going to hopefully get it onto the calendar committee and onto the floor as soon as possible. It's obviously something very, very important for the city and I think San Antonio as well as the state.
Is there a budget item for the National Center for Warrior Resiliency? Will this require some Texas state money?
That's a good question. And so, you know the challenges that we've had with this budget in particular. And so part of it was setting up this center for something that we're already doing. And I think that Dr. Peterson will elaborate a little bit later in the show about how we already have 50 employees in San Antonio. We have 30 employees at Fort Hood, all under this consortia that he's established, 3 employees at Fort Bliss. And so while there are no monies in the bill in and of itself, there's no fiscal impact because really it's nomenclature. We're changing the name of what they're doing and establishing the center. What my hope is that we can try to gear some money through the budgeting process, and I think we're going to be in the budget probably in the first week of April, around April 6th, and see where we can rob Peter to pay Paul a little bit for a very important measure. And the monies would go not so much for facilities, but for getting, let's say, a veteran in Brewster or Reeves County over to San Antonio, over to Fort Hood, whichever is closest, and put them in a treatment, an inpatient treatment program that lasts 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully they come out cured. And I think that that's the biggest myth, is that there is no... That this is an illness that is not curable, or it's a soft kind of an illness. It's very real. And as I've sat in this committee, and again, I'm honored to be there, but I sit now and talk to veterans daily. And we take 18-year-olds and send them off to war and put them in positions that none of us would ever dream of being. And the things that are happening now overseas are daunting. And scary. And I don't think, unfortunately, we'd all pray for peace. I pray for peace every night. But I just don't think that it's that our position in Afghanistan and Iraq to some degree and in other parts of Africa and the Middle East are going to go away. I think that we're going to continue to have soldiers in harm's way. And unfortunately, they will contract the issues that cause PTSD, and we need to address those concerns. And so this center will hopefully be able to do that.
What about the civilian component? What about the civilian? Because in the documents I saw, it says that civilians would also be available to take advantage of this center.
That's also my hope. You've seen what we've done at BAMSI. I think you guys did a story on it about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. What we have done now at SAMC, I guess at our burn unit. I think that the story was about Marty Winder, I believe, who had severely burned himself and had, I don't know if it was a heart attack, something happened to him while he was in a steam bath, and he was there for hours, and somebody found him later. He had third-degree burns. And so our burn unit has become the primary place where civilians go and get cared for. And not just civilians from San Antonio, but from civilians from all over the world. And so certainly these installations, these institutions are there to take care of our military. But in the end, if we can be able to have a civilian application for them, I think that's something that serves everybody. And certainly we should be striving to do.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking with State Representative Roland Gutierrez about his bill to create the National Center for Warrior Resiliency, a place to deal with PTSD treatment here in San Antonio. We're going to continue the conversation when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about making San Antonio a national destination for resiliency treatment and training and research. And what does that mean? Well, it's connected to PTSD treatment, but it's more than that. We're on the line. We have State Representative Roland Gutierrez from District 119 here in San Antonio, the chair of the Texas House Defense and Veterans Affairs Committee. And we're talking about his bill, HB 2571, to talk about that. Also, our phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you about what's your take on making San Antonio Military City USA, possibly Resilience City USA, how that could change, what we could add to it here. not just, you know, having this center here, but overall character of San Antonio. People have said so often, I've heard it on the air many times, about when they come to San Antonio, even and Warriors and recovering, they really feel a difference here. And San Antonio overall could play a role in creating the National Center for Warrior Resiliency. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. So Representative Gutierrez, back to how this could impact civilians. So would this National Center be involved in treatment, but also research?
No, absolutely. It's involved in treatment as well as research. What Dr. Peterson, as well as all the good folks at UT Health Science Center have been able to do is bring together millions of dollars over the last several years to do treatment and research. They do different studies. This change of name, if you will, is going to hopefully allow us to put us on the map and say, look, you know, this is when you have cancer, what do you think about? You think of the Mayo Clinic or MD Anderson. Certainly when there's a burn injury, you think of SAMHSA. You think of the burn unit. I still call it BAMHSA. But that's what we think about from a worldwide perspective. When you think of children's diseases, you think of the CHOP units in Pennsylvania.
And or St.
So
Jude.
This is an opportunity for us to put us on the map where we already are, in the sense that we're the national leader on monies that are going towards this issue. And so this change of nomenclature is going to allow us to, number one, raise more money, and hopefully down the line, this legislature has never given any real direct money towards this research. And so it's my hope that whether in this session or the next, the monies that we send are not directed towards facilities, but rather into bringing more soldiers to these treatment centers, whether it's in San Antonio or Fort Hood or Fort Bliss, to where they can reach our clinicians and be able to get this valuable treatment. I talked to a soldier yesterday who did a 6-week treatment program at Fort Hood, and he told me, he said, he actually cried to me in my office. He said, you know, I would put myself to bed at night, and I would cry myself to bed. First sergeant in the Army who was in Afghanistan on 2 different tours, and, you know, he told me some horror stories. In one instance, you know, watching one of his colleagues die, holding his brains in his hands. Another instance where, you know, they had to shoot up a bus that was shooting at them, and there was a little boy inside. Luckily, the little boy didn't pass away, but they ended up killing his father, and he had to take that little boy back home to his family with one of the translators. Another instance, just similar story, and, you know, those are things that not any human being should have to do. Can you imagine what it does to your mind to go in and clear neighborhoods in Fallujah and go into house number one and not know what's behind that door? And so, you know, just the simply to say, well, they're soldiers and we're paying them to do that is not enough. We need to take care of our soldiers, and we didn't take care of our Vietnam soldiers. We didn't take care of our World War II soldiers. We expected them to suck it up, and this is not, it's not right. It's a real injury. I often hear folks thinking, tell me that it's not a real injury. Absolutely it is, and I think that the experts can elaborate more on that. I'll leave that to Dr. Peterson.
Well, let me ask that, Dr. Peterson, about resiliency and what does that mean?
Sure. There's many different definitions, if you will. Most of the work we've been doing with PTSD, for example, one version of resiliency would be if you could take someone that's suffering from PTSD and treat them to the point where they have recovered and they can, you know, kind of move on, contribute to their, you know, support their family, contribute to their neighborhoods, to our nation. You know, that's one version of resiliency, would be helping somebody recover after they've been through something traumatic like that. The other piece, which is a huge emphasis, but it's much more difficult to figure out the best science behind it, it's how to prevent problems. So trying to train military, police, firefighters, EMS, for example, provide the proper training to allow them to experience these unexpected things and come through that still doing well. So that's the other end of the continuum.
Right. So we heard the stories from Representative Gutierrez about people that he spoke with, and these anecdotes are terrible, these events that happen to these individuals. But not everyone who goes through those circumstances is going to end up with PTSD. Is that right, Dr. Peterson?
Absolutely.
So we know about maybe 1 in 5 probably will come
up. That's a good estimate. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to figure out what makes one person vulnerable and what makes another person resistant to actually coming down with. You're going to leave these events obviously changed, okay? But whether or not you're going to come down with all of these negative symptoms that are going to make living a normal life very difficult afterwards is what we're trying to establish, right?
Absolutely. And so another way of wording what you just said is, you know, the 80% of people that somehow either do well or they figure out how to recover on their own, how is that working? We don't always think about looking at the unaffected, if you will, or those that are, you know, not the target of something like PTSD. So there's things to learn from people who manage well. Also, we just don't know enough about that and need to do more research.
And Colonel Carode, when you're dealing with soldiers, warriors now who are in country dealing, and are you looking to screen people who may be vulnerable, who don't have a lot of resiliency, or you may be trying to boost resiliency through training? What's happening?
That's a great question, David. So the special operations tenet, or truth number one, is that humans are more important than hardware. We know that there's going to be variation from person to person. What we'd like to do is start them all on the same page with resiliency training. So stress awareness, physical resiliency, social support programs, et cetera. When we can initiate this kind of intervention early.
So you're asking people to self-monitor.
So teams work together like this, and we found that in operational settings, teams watch each other very closely. If we go through this as teams, that has been a successful approach so far.
And can a person improve their resiliency, or is it a constant, you are what you are? It's like how tall you are.
It is absolutely a dynamic and developable trait. There are factors that we cannot change, but there's definitely by education and training elements that we can influence positively.
And is this something that can carry over to civilians? I mean, people go through traumatic events all the time, car crashes, sexual assault, being a victim of a crime. These are things that shake people. And this research that y'all have, how can that be applied to civilians?
So there are some directly translatable communities or fields. We mentioned firefighters, law enforcement, EMS. In Texas already, we're seeing the Texas Department of Public Safety has a SHIELD program for law enforcement where they do psychological and physical resiliency. The Cypress Creek EMS in Houston has a similar physical resiliency program. San Antonio Fire has a performance optimization with enhanced resiliency, a power program, which is moving in a similar direction. So definitely translatable. And there's a long history of translating between military and civilian advances. That sort of collaboration is going to ultimately be what's successful.
But I've seen studies showing that we're seeing like 1 in 5 women who live in the inner city, African-American women live in very poor, violent-prone neighborhoods are also dealing with high levels of PTSD. Mm-hmm. And that they're trying to deal with it in the typical ways that they have sleep problems, they self-medicate, and they have trouble dealing with everyday stress because of this type of activity. So there's all sorts of people who can benefit from this. But Representative Roland Gutierrez, back to your drive to create the National Center for Warrior Resiliency here in San Antonio. How does the UT Health Science Center come in as a partner?
Well, again, I mean, it was really a basic, just me questioning what was going on in our community. You know that 11% of our homeless population in the United States is a veteran. And so if you were to extrapolate the mental illness quotient on that, about half of that, of the 11%, have some form of mental illness or another. And that's how all this started, you know, just watching some documentaries and looking at statistics. And I thought it was astounding to me that we couldn't do more for our veterans, that we had so many homeless veterans out there. You know, what was on the PTSD side, it was just it was the same kind of consternation that I had, that we were sending these soldiers off to these foreign wars, and we're not doing enough. And certainly Dr. Peterson and his colleagues all around the nation are doing what they can. But this is really something that we need to be addressing. And there are elements and components in society that do dismiss it, because it's not an injury where someone was injured in a blast or there's some physical wound. And so we can't be dismissive of it. We have to understand fully what it is and not just apply it to these folks in the military, but to our civilian life.
So Representative Gutierrez, do you think that the establishment of the National Center for Warrior Resiliency in San Antonio will be a step forward in helping people understand that PTSD is a actual disease and it's not something, a weakness, but it's something that happens to almost anyone?
Well, I'll tell you, David, there's also something else that's out there. And I'm not discounting any of it. There's also a lot of fuzzy animal stuff out there. You know, you take folks on a fishing trip or down whitewater rafting, as Dr. Peterson likes to say, and that doesn't cure anybody of anything. It's just somebody having a nice weekend. There are other organizations, and I don't want to speak ill of any of them. They all, I'm sure, have some benefit. You know, and a lot of them have to do with animals. But I would like something to be more founded on science and
yeah,
mental health.
But just trying to get rid of the stigma of PTSD and seeking treatment, anything we can do in that area, because that is a problem.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. That stigma is out there. We need to break those barriers. We need to break that stigma. And I'm not being parochial in saying that, well, look, I'm going to bring this to San Antonio. We are already doing it in San Antonio. We're already doing it better than most folks in the United States in conjunction with Fort Hood and Fort Bliss. So absolutely, this is all about breaking that stigma and all about ensuring that our city keeps being the leader when it comes to military health issues. There is also that piece that old city council person in me that says, hey, there's going to be another BRAC closure down the line, and we need to make sure that we're doing our part as a city, because the last BRAC opportunity gave us the opportunity to expand our healthcare mission. We need to make sure that we're doing our part and showing the federal government and our legislators and our senators that we're also doing more stuff.
Right. We don't want to have another Cali closure on our hands by creating something like this National Center. Then you're maximizing San Antonio's ability. But when you go talk to your fellow representatives looking for those votes, do you tell them this is something that will benefit warriors from across the state?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you have to have, it's unfortunate, but you have to have that whole parochial discussion when people say, well, why not? Why not us? And the why not us is really clear. Dr. Peterson and his colleagues have spent the last 10 years raising millions of dollars doing this, more than any other city in the nation. And so we are moving in the right direction already. And the second thing I tell them is, look, it's not just Bexar County. We're doing this at Fort Hood. We're doing this at Fort Bliss. And any money that we can get to this center in the future will be directed at bringing veterans from Brewster County or Reeves County or up near Beaumont down to their closest facility, whether it's Fort Hood or San Antonio.
And having a partner having a partner like the UT Health Science Center certainly maximizes the ability to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, if we're already doing it, why reinvent the wheel?
All right, Representative Roland Gutierrez, we got to let you go from District 119 here in San Antonio, Chair of the Texas House Defense and Veterans Affairs Committee. We're going to continue our conversation as we talk about PTSD treatment here in the city. What's happening? What's the latest developments? What is science telling us? Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you about your stories with PTSD and seeking treatment. How did your experience go? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Stay tuned. This is Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM KSTX, and this is The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. Post-traumatic stress disorder affects an estimated 7.7 million American adults in a given year. It's debilitating. It can lead to suicide. Yet this illness is largely underserved by the medical community. There is stigma attached, and there's science behind it, but it's still not clear, 100% clear, and there's still a lot of research to be done. And many people affected by PTSD do not or cannot seek treatment. But here in San Antonio, there is a drive to create a National Center for Warrior Resiliency that can treat veterans and also civilians from across the country. So should San Antonio make Military City USA the National Center for Resiliency and PTSD Treatment? Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Aaron has called in. And Aaron, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was calling. I noticed the program was focused on veterans of the military, police departments, what have you, and I'm so glad that's being addressed. But I was wondering what type of resources this center, or if there are other resources in San Antonio for just the average civilian person that's experienced sexual abuse or physical abuse or some sort of other trauma that can lead to PTSD.
Okay, Aaron, thank you for that call. I appreciate that. So, Dr. Peterson.
Sure. So, part of the idea behind this center would be that we would be available to do that. Right now, the funding that we've received is mostly from the Department of Defense, the Department of Veterans Affairs. The focus is on the military piece. It's interesting that most of the research we're doing now, it actually was informed by civilian research for physical, sexual assault, that type of thing. We're taking that science and applying it to the military for the first time, and our results will apply to civilians as well. So right now, with the programs we've been funded for, we don't have programs specifically for civilians, but we should. In the future, we would like to offer the same treatments, the top-notch treatments that are developed through our group. We would like those to be available for civilians as well. Right now, those programs aren't available, but that's part of what I think we really need for the future.
Colonel Carode, do people make assumptions about individuals based on where they grew up and where they came from, and assume because you grew up on the streets, maybe you have higher resiliency, and maybe because you grew up in a gated neighborhood, maybe you don't? I mean, how do you parse that out?
So part of that is maybe just the basic understanding that, you know, everybody brings something specific, and then everybody brings something in common to whatever their life situation is. So our experience in the military is probably that we establish a new baseline, and that's a little different from what the civilian community sees. So meaning that when we get trainees in, we all start on the same sheet of music, and then we go from there.
Everybody's got the same haircut.
Something like that. So along with the haircut, hopefully some a shared perspective and a shared vision. A little more challenging to do in the civilian community, but not out of our reach, I think, particularly if we can collaborate.
Okay, another caller, Tom. And Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. So I work in the mental health and substance abuse field, and it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine when I hear people think that PTSD isn't treatable. Now, I've worked in the civilian sector. I was an active duty military provider. I've treated trauma, and that's what I specialize in. And time and time and time again, if people get the appropriate care, they get better. The misconception, I think, is that at the end of the day, we have what we hear on the media is that people have things happen and they don't recover. There's intrinsic resiliency that help that people just get through stuff on their own. Sometimes they need a little bit of help. But at the end of the day, there are three very effective frontline treatments for treating post-traumatic stress disorder: prolonged exposure therapy, cognitive processing therapy, and EMDR. And, you know, after I've been doing this for 20 years, I've had more success treating PTSD with EMDR than anything else that I've done, and that's including military, combat, sexual assault, you know, people with trauma get better.
Okay, Tom. So thank you for your call. I appreciate that. And so, Dr. Peterson, EMDR, what is that again? And do you have the same observations?
So EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So it's another version of a PTSD treatment. There is evidence that it is effective. It has not been researched as much, so we know much less about it than we do some of the other therapies. The one therapy, prolonged exposure, that was developed by Edna Foa at University of Pennsylvania. She is in my office right now, so we have her visiting right now for the study she's working with. And this afternoon, she's going to be out at Brooke Army Medical Center. Tomorrow, she'll be at Wolford Hall, so she's working with the providers there. I like to use the analogy of cancer. What's the treatment for cancer? Well, it depends on what type of cancer. I mean, there's many kinds of cancer. There's chemotherapy, there's radiation, there's surgery. I think over time PTSD will be like that. We mentioned three treatments. There's probably not just three. Those are the three most common. We need to do more research. We need to develop as many different types of treatments that meet the needs of individuals. The other piece is, if you're treated for cancer and you still have cancer at the end of your treatment, you're going to look for something else. And I think that's important to think about for PTSD, is if you've tried one thing and it hasn't worked, that doesn't mean you need to give up. There may be other treatments that are available that would be helpful to you.
And Colonel Carode, how soon after a traumatic event should a person begin to seek some sort of treatment for boosting their resiliency or trying to even prevent? How soon does PTSD begin to exhibit itself?
So a lot of this is individual or dependent on the individual and their own characteristics. One approach that we like to take in the military or in the special operations community is that human maintenance needs to be much more systematic. Sometimes we find that our vehicle maintenance might be more systematic than how we take care of ourselves. So clearly there's an opportunity to have preventive measures in between. And then sometimes it's not the individual themselves. It's going to be the person on the left or right of them that notices that something's not right. Normalizing this discussion and making it okay to talk about it. Hey, David, how are you doing? Seems like you're not quite yourself right now. Sometimes that'll be the door that's held open for us to walk through.
Well, it used to be in a car when things could go wrong, a little red light would come on. Nowadays, it's, you know, there's a whole interface that's telling you exactly what's wrong with the car or whatever. And if you, and click and clack would say, just take a piece of black tape and cover it and everything's okay. But we don't want to do that with people. We want to at least be monitoring ourselves and others around us to make sure that we're aware of the signals that they're providing. So what about, you know, this hyper arousal I keep hearing about, which is a person being quick to anger, this hair trigger, you know, they go from 0 to 100, just like that. Is that something that people should be looking for as a sign that maybe this person needs to get some treatment?
Sure. That's one sign. And to use the auto analogy as well, we have a service member that we saw for the first treatment session just this morning and set in, and he is really, really nervous. And the analogy we gave, it's almost as if he's sitting at a traffic light and his accelerator is pushed almost to the floor. The engine is running and running. And if we can't figure out a way to kind of reset that, it's going to wear the machine out over time. And so sometimes that's what happens. Sometimes there's a rapid 0 to 60 that happens. Other times a person is just, you know, just sitting there and their whole engine is revved up a lot as well. So there's different parts of that, and we need to have ways to address both of those factors.
Okay. Amy has called in. Amy, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a mental health professional, and I'm in private practice in San Antonio. And I wanted to call in and say I'm so happy to hear this topic being discussed in this way. And I'm excited to hear that there's a piece of legislation that might help to create more of a structure, even if it's abstract, around the idea of an institution that helps to take care of PTSD patients. Because as a private practitioner, it's very expensive to get the most effective training. I just recently completed the EMDR training, and it costs about $1,500. And I'm excited because I feel like if there's an institution type place where the information can be housed and shared and resources can be expanded, that we're going to help treat trauma patients all across the country with that type of knowledge, just like the Mayo Clinic and MD Anderson help with advancing cancer treatment, we need one centralized place for all of this to be taking place.
Okay, Amy, thank you for the call. So, Dr. Peterson, talk about how this would plug into an already existing matrix that we have in San Antonio, like with the UT Health Science Center and private practitioners who do this type of work.
Oh, that's an excellent comment from the last caller. So part of what we want the center to be also is a center for training. So we don't want people to have to travel halfway across the country and pay large amounts of money to receive training. So part of what we are already doing, we have lots of therapists that have been trained and that are they're experts. So the center also will be providing training for individuals throughout the state of Texas to begin with. In fact, I mentioned earlier, and don't want to go into details, but the Texas Veterans and Families Initiative just funded one of our projects to do this exactly, to be training mental health professionals around the state of Texas on the latest evidence-based intervention. So we also want to be working with our community providers. It's interesting that most veterans, that are going to be leaving the military, a lot of them will get their care from civilians. So we need to make sure they have the best tools as well to help our veterans.
Okay, we're going to continue our conversation as we talk about making San Antonio a national destination for resiliency research and treatment that's related to PTSD, but not confined to PTSD. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back. We got a lot of callers on the board, Stephen, Renee, Matthew, hang on. We'll get to you when we come back from this one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking today about making San Antonio a national destination for resiliency treatment. There's a bill in the Texas House right now, creating the National Center for Warrior Resiliency here, which would be in cooperation with the UT Health Science Center. And Dr. Peterson, would you become the head of this center if this becomes to be?
I hope so. I hope that that's the case. That's not been decided at this point, but this has been an initiative that I've had for many years from now. So I hope that I'm certainly a leading competitor for it.
And you certainly have a track record of working with the Operation Strong Star here in San Antonio. And I can't believe all the grants that you get. Do you just write grants all the time, but you're actually doing research as well in treatment?
So most of the research that we do is actually clinical treatment. So almost all of our studies involve the treatment of individuals. So we really do mostly treatment, but we're also asking questions. And again, I think the MD Anderson analogy is really good. At MD Anderson, a lot of people there are involved in clinical trials. That's where you get the very best care. But the reason it's the best is people are always asking the next question. They're not satisfied with the results. They always want to push this a little further and get even better results.
And Colonel Carode, how would you take advantage of a National Center for Warrior Resiliency with the way that you're treating with actual soldiers and warriors who are now enlisted?
So the beauty of this sort of interaction is that there is already an ongoing exchange between Dr. Peterson and his work and what the operational psychologists in the military are doing. Many of the folks that are currently active have worked with him or learned from him in the past. So very much a collaborative approach and an exchange of ideas, hopefully, is the future that we're looking for.
Okay, back to the calls. Stephen is on the line. Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to tell you about my experience with the VA. I mean, the source of my PTSD wasn't something that the psychologist was prepared to hear, I guess. So he was just really taken aback, and I don't blame him for it. I mean, a lot of PTSD comes from the combat side of the military. I just saw some things that I wasn't able to handle.
Okay, Stephen, thank you for the call. And so, Dr. Peterson, I mean, a person doesn't have to become in direct contact with these traumatic event. They could just be aware of it, right?
Sure. There's many different types of trauma exposure. We think mostly about being in combat and shooting and killing and all of those types of things. But, seeing human remains, people can be a photographer, for example. And we talked earlier on the break about reporters can be exposed to things. So
I've seen some terrible things. Horrible, dead bodies piled up. I've been to,
Right. So there's lots of things that can occur. And just back to the last caller, what tends to cause PTSD are things that you would never, ever, ever expect occurring. And that's kind of the hallmark of it. When you're ready for it, when you're trained for it, the military does a great job. And people actually manage really well with things that are within the realm of possibility. It's these one-offs that no one would ever expect happening that really causes people to struggle.
And Colonel Carode, how do you communicate that to your men and women that this is something that they have to deal with, even if they didn't actually experience it themselves?
So one excellent experience we've had is just stress awareness and education, as well as when you encounter something that you have never even heard of before. First of all, just knowing you may encounter something like that is a huge plus. And then also the idea that you are going to have a very normal reaction to an extremely abnormal circumstance. Here's how you should recognize that, and here's some steps you can take immediately.
Another caller, Renee. Renee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having this topic. I'm a civilian, never been in the military or anything. When I was young, I was at a large university here in Texas. In my late teens, I should say, we traveled via shuttle bus. And the shuttle bus that we waited for was actually on a small highway, something like Bandera Road or something to that effect. And we were talking with the university transportation department to do something about that and have us wait on a side road. And many of us were out petitioning, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one day I was coming back on the shuttle, and they let us off right where an accident had just happened, as what we were trying to not allow to happen. And there was a ravine, like on Bandera. It launched up, and children, you know, my age were on both sides. So they got taken out by this car that flew in the air. There was a car waiting to turn. It got hit. So basically, this was a terrible scene. People were screaming. People were dying. It was very, very terrible. And I did not expect it. The police weren't there yet. The ambulances weren't there yet. So I ended up staying on college. And then one day I got on the bus, and I could not stay on the bus. And I got off. And then another bus came, and I got back on. And I couldn't do it. And finally, I had to call my brother to come pick me up in the car. I didn't know what it was, what was wrong. So I ended up having to leave school. And after I did that, I was shaking. My body was literally shaking whenever I was sitting down doing anything. And I didn't know what it was. People didn't know what PTSD was. I was going to do doctors for scans on my brain, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, nobody found anything. And then finally, it hurt me throughout my life in that it was hard, as the doctor was suggesting, that you get angry very easily. And so holding a job, employment, was an issue for me. I was at one, and I didn't want to lose this job. So finally, in my 50s, I went to a psychiatrist and a psychologist and a therapist. And after hours and hours of dealing with these people, them helping me, I'm finally the happiest I've ever been in my life. But it took over three decades for me to become clean, you know, to enjoy my life, to be free of it. And I just hope that other people can get help quicker than I did.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for calling in with your story and sharing that. I sure do appreciate you calling in with that story. Dr. Peterson.
Well, I agree. That was a story that is just so consistent with many individuals that have experienced trauma. One point, the most common cause of PTSD in America, motor vehicle accidents. So what was just described is actually very, very common. The other point is, without getting in for the right care, people can suffer for decades and decades. And if they can get in and get the right care, that's what we're hoping for. We're hoping that people can get to the point where they can continue to live the rest of their life the way that they would like to live it, to have the freedom to be able to do that. And without care, people can suffer for decades.
He talked about the trigger. He got back on the bus, and then that was a trigger. It brought back the full force of the actual full event. Is that something that you look for, Colonel Carode?
So it's very common to have had an experience like that, perhaps not shared by anybody who's surrounding you or with you now, and your trigger is not known to all those people. So we definitely try to trace back to what it was.
It could be a song, it could be a smell.
Exactly. And they can be very powerful, triggering emotions. So we also try to make the individual on our military side pretty self-aware that this is my trigger, or this happened to me.
Okay. Matthew, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi there. Kind of a curious point. I'm a long-term first responder in safety and police fields. Got plenty of friends and family and colleagues who are ex-military. And I know that among all the fields, we generally value concision to get your point across in an emergency situation. So I wonder especially why the why this bill or program is set up with the word, what is it, resiliency? It just seems, don't most people say resilient? I don't know if that's maybe imprecise bill writing, but as somebody who needs to communicate in a hurry in an emergency situation, that kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Okay, Matthew, thank you for the call. And so the National Center for Warrior Resiliency is the title. And Dr. Alan Peterson, any comments, any reaction?
I think it's a wordsmith, whether the word resilience fits best there or the word resiliency. I mean, I think it's a choice of words. I think the emphasis on the points and the vision and the mission, I think that part is similar.
Okay, Benjamin. Hi, Benjamin. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, sir. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call. Maybe I'm biased as an American military officer candidate, but I can't obviously find a downside to the program. So my question is then, you know, are there naysayers to this, and what are they saying? Or is it simply that more awareness needs to be raised to help get just awareness up and around with the everyday men and women of America?
Okay, Benjamin, thank you for the call. Dr. Peterson, as you have gone out and worked in this field quite a bit, obviously you know this is something that's needed, it's necessary, this pays back dividends as we treat people, we spend tax dollars to treat people, and we regain, we relieve suffering, which is important, a thing in and of itself, but also people become, they stop self-medicating, they stop self-harm, we save lives, lots of good reasons that this type should be invested in, but why would anyone be opposed to this?
I guess the main reason someone might be opposed is that everything that's done, there's a potential cost with that. And so I think as it's been discussed earlier, at this point, there's no bill, there's no cost that's associated with it. So that part I think is easy for people to understand. But if there ends up being, you know, funds that need to be devoted towards this, there's so many concerns that exist in our country, and people have different opinions on where resources should go. So
it seems like people who have a resistance to this resiliency issue that they don't really have yet to be made aware of what's happening. And this is part of the education process that I think also the National Center for Warrior Resiliency will take part in as well. I want to thank our two guests here, Dr. Alan Peterson, he's the director of Strong Star, working to alleviate PTSD, and also Colonel Cheetan Kurode. He is the Disaster Medicine Fellowship Program Director, or all sorts of good things. Thank you so much. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.